Welcome to our AJAG PD Pod, the place for discussion, debate, and learning about all things accounting. Our hosts, Ivan Tabak, Jonathan Tucker, are CPAs that have been in practice for more than 3 decades. Together, they bring varying experience and viewpoints to the table, not to mention a little humor, too. Join us as we talk through current issues and hot topics, tap into expert guest insights, and enjoy the odd walk down AJAG memory lane. Before we begin today's podcast, please note, although the educational material within the podcast has been carefully prepared, none of the persons involved in the preparation of the material accepts any legal responsibility for its contents or for any consequences arising from its use. As well, the podcast material and the references contained therein may reflect laws and practices that are subject to change. Advice regarding a particular fact or situation should always be reviewed by a qualified professional. This podcast is produced and distributed by AJAG Professional Development. For more information about AJAG or any of its offerings, please visit ajag.ca.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast brought to you by AJAG. I'm Jonathan Tucker, and I'll be hosting today's discussion. It's a topic that we're diving into that has become increasingly important among professionals across Canada, CRA audits, and how accountants can better support their clients in managing audit risk. Joining me for this conversation is Jason Koenig from Accountancy Insurance. Some of you may know him, may recognize him. Jason is an expert on Audit Shield, which is a tax audit insurance solution that's helping CPAs across Canada protect their clients from unexpected professional fees when it comes to dealing with the CRA. So he's going to walk us through what Audit Shield is, how it works, and why so many firms across the country are using it as a key service to, or offering it as a key service to their clients. We're also joined by Ben Grant from Badal Tax Law. He's going to provide his insights into the various aspects of CRA audits. Ben is counsel at Badal Tax Law. That's a firm that specializes in tax litigation. So he will bring his background and experience with CRA audits, which makes him a trusted advisor and certainly somebody we'll want to hear from in today's discussion as far as it comes to how to navigate complex tax disputes. He's also going to cover what businesses and individuals need to know in order to avoid common mistakes and also when it's time to involve a lawyer. So we have a lot to cover in today's discussion, including the latest trends in CRA audit activity, common misconceptions about Audit Shield, and what accountants should be thinking about when it comes to audit risk management. So whether you're a CPA looking to enhance your service offerings or simply trying to stay ahead of the curve in today's tax audit landscape, this episode's for you. So let's get started. Well, welcome, Ben and Jason. Good to see you. Thanks for making time for this today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, pleasure.
Very good. So I want to start a little bit about the basics in terms of what you're seeing in CRA audits. What does a CRA audit in your world look like nowadays?
Well, there's so many ways to answer that, but I suppose it's best to qualify the fact that what we're seeing is a reflection of the notice of assessment letters that are submitted to us by thousands of CPAs across the country at various CPA firms that have Audit Shield. Mm. And the what we're seeing most commonly, what we could say just in the last tax season, the three common reasons why there is an increase in notice of assessment letters is what CPAs are telling us, Jonathan, is the enhanced powers that they seem to have as far as administering penalties. There's the increased funding and resources, which is a testament to the increased budget really every year. Mm. And finally, it's the sophistication with the data analytics. You know, we're seeing a lot more usage of AI tools to be able to click send on notification letters, right? So when we looked at our numbers, comparatively speaking, from let's say the 2 years in COVID versus the 2 years out of COVID, the number of claim submissions that we've seen from our CPA partners has increased by about 80% based on the previous couple of years. So there's no question that the CRA certainly has their mojo back.
And do you think that's because there's more activity, or because Audit Shield firms are now Is that a result of more CRA activity? Or well, do you think it's that, oh, you know what? Yeah, we can put this through Audit Shield now.
I think it's a fair point to say that, based on our coverage and the fact that we cover everything from a post-assessment review on a T1 all the way through to a full-blown audit. So there could be an increase in awareness of coverage and what we're able to provide coverage for that maybe CPAs weren't aware of previously. But our data certainly shows that, comparatively speaking, year over year, this tax season versus last tax season, that there's definitely an increase, not only in the frequency of submissions, but also in the amount of additional time invested in having to respond to corporate post-assessment reviews, your GST, HST, professional fees is a really big one right now. Yeah. Certainly the severity of time spent is also increased alongside the frequency of submissions.
More on the corporate or personal or both?
Both. Yeah. But certainly, we were able to break down the data based on the internal submissions that we received on the notice of assessment letters. Notice of assessment letters that do tell us where they're coming from.
So corporate, where do you see, what trends are you seeing in corporate?
Yeah, I share some interesting data with you if you'd like. We can get into it because I work with CPAs where, we do claim sessions and they're always curious to know, the CRA trends, for example, year over year, month over month, and where the CRA level of scrutiny is trending, what to expect, for example, maybe in the next couple of months. Yeah. So why don't I take you through last year versus the previous year?
Okay. And is this broken down by region or are you seeing it? Is it consistent across the country or is Atlantic Canada different than out west?
So the data I'm able to share with you today is a perspective of all of Canada.
Okay.
So to answer your question, no, it's not broken down by region.
Okay.
But let me walk you through here. So to reiterate where this data comes from, it's our internal numbers that is based on thousands of CPAs that submit claims to us. A claim is basically a notice of assessment letter whereby your professional time and having to respond to the CRA is covered by Audit Shield.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are not, they just absorb the time.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't want to have that conversation with my client because they're so fee sensitive, even if it's $150. Mm-hmm. Right. So.
Well, and that's just it. Right. And so the reason why we're seeing an increase in take up, we call it, is because those that are able to charge their clients don't want to be surprised with additional fees.
Yeah.
And the fact is, based on our internal data, we are seeing an increase in the frequency and certainly the severity of the amount of time that's required to respond. Mm. But let me take you through what we're seeing here. Like just looking at 2024 versus 23, the total submission overall for the claims from notice of assessment letters has increased by 12.5% from last from 23 versus 24. And here's some key areas of focus. So GST, HST, they nearly doubled the post and pre-assessment reviews. Mm. The vehicle expense was a big one last year. I mean, you remember in 2023, it was all about professional fees.
Yeah.
In fact, with vehicle expense reviews, we saw a 108% increase in the average amount of time invested. And you probably know this answer better than I do as to why, but my guess is probably around additional vehicle logs, maybe additional years that they're looking into that may have added to that increase in time.
They could be asking more questions about the same thing.
There you go.
That would drive that kind of thing, right? Like whereas the questionnaire used to be one page, the questionnaire is three pages, right? And the professional needs to spend 5 hours to
got it. For non-business tax is a big one. This 2024 versus 2023, we saw 49% increase in the volume of those submissions and 124% increase in the average amount of time invested. And finally, on the personal tax side, especially on the matching and processing reviews, depending on the month, we saw across the board, the quantity was up and the time spent, as I say, depending on the month, was between 30 to 60% of an increase of the amount of time invested. So that's what we saw in 24 versus 23. And I thought for fun, what was it like during tax season? Okay. Was it something where The CRA actually gave you a bit of a reprieve this year and gave you a chance to really focus on your clients. So we did a bit of a search in our internal data comparing this tax season versus last tax season. Mm. Let me share that data with you too. Right? Kind of interesting here. So when we look at March to April, our claims increased by 30%. Claims, again, notice of assessment letters that we're receiving from our CPA partners. Right. Here's the area of focus over the last couple of months or 60 days. We saw corporate post-assessing reviews, particularly within the professional fees segment. Yeah, 146% increase in the time spent compared to this time last year. T3 trust reviews was up almost 60%, in obviously indicating the CRA's scrutiny and trust in the state-related filings. Once again, foreign non-business tax was a big one, 85% increase in volume. Yeah. And then finally, on the personal tax side, a huge increase again on the matching programs in particular was up about 136% on the time spent in having to address those.
I'll be interested, Jason, to see just in our office what this summer is like because just of the fiasco with respect to the slips, the delay.
Right.
And so now, you know, just as we look at some of the returns, because there was so much problems with the CRA Connect program where we would rely on that. And now clients weren't getting all of their slips to start with. That was already a problem. And then not having that to fall back on. Mm-hmm. And just looking at now some of the returns where we're doing CRA Connect post-filing and seeing, shoot, that we didn't see that slip and we weren't aware of this, right? So I think we haven't even started to see what 2024 is like. You're seeing ahead of me, but that would be my prediction, because I know internally we've been saying, I'm kind of dreading this summer just because there are so many, particularly personally, so many slips that didn't get reported. So Ben, what are you seeing in terms of CRA activity in your practice?
Yeah, well, I'm a tax lawyer, so I tend to get involved in audits that involve larger amounts of money or in the disputes that fall out of those audits. So in my world, a driver for the last number of years, and it still remains one, is real estate. Like that is one of the large, for large scale audits with large dollar amounts.
And what in particular?
Well, you could see a couple of issues. I think the overall concern is something to do with house flipping. Like that manifests as principal residence exemptions being looked at and GST, HST for people who build their own houses.
Yeah, of course.
Like that's a very heavy driver of CRA audits in the GTA.
We actually saw a letter last week on house flipping.
Yeah.
Right. And it was in BC, this one. So for the CPA having to address that, their time is covered in any kind of legal action, your time would be covered. So.
Yeah, and those end up being big dollars, because if you're a Toronto house and you build it's got $2 million value. And let's say the CRA says that should have been charged HST because it was a commercial, isn't the scope of commercial activities. That's 13% of $2
million,
plus possibly a penalty, plus possibly some income tax. If you lived in it and claimed an exemption, you'd have to pay income on the profit you made on it. So
change of use, are you running across anything on change of use or not?
I mean, it's not as heavy a driver as what I just described. Yeah. I think that does come up. What would you mean by change of use?
Oh, somebody who inadvertently, and this would be a GST issue, they had a rental property and they decided that they were going to turn it into an Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. I get a lot of inquiries from people worried about that.
Yeah.
But I have yet to see the avalanche. I think there's an avalanche there because a lot of people unwittingly have done a bunch of change of uses with their condos.
Yeah.
And I think it's only a matter of time if it's not already.
And nobody thinks, a client doesn't think, oh, you know what, I should call Jonathan before we post it on Verbo or Airbnb, right? Yeah,
it's very counterintuitive. The tax consequence is very counterintuitive. You wouldn't think I bought a used condo or maybe even a new condo and I used it for long-term rental. Maybe I lived there.
Yeah.
And maybe I used it a little bit for short-term rental here and there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That there was some huge tax implication from doing that. Yeah. So I think it's just a matter of time before a lot of people do get.
Yeah. And so the real key for us is educate clients, like put out a blog post or something or other just on this stuff, because they won't even be thinking about it, right? And talk about horror stories about how you're seeing CRA auditing this stuff and what the consequences are.
Yeah.
Right? Another one I saw was a principal residence exemption. CRA questioned it. It was on an estate return. And this I found fascinating. They went back and they, to the taxpayer, said, you claimed that property for rental income for a number of years. And so we got into this situation where they asked for floor plans and the percentage of the space that was rented. And it actually turned out that it really wasn't a rental situation. It was a mother and a daughter, and she was paying her mother room and board. And so, and they were doing their own returns themselves. And so this was after the estate, and they came back and they denied 45% of the capital gain for principal residence. And so, yeah. And this house had been bought pre-71, huge gain on it. Mm-hmm. They just waited for a couple of years and then came back on it and denied 45% of the principal resident, and the taxpayer had to pay about $250,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, I should have warned you the amount.
Yeah, no kidding. My goodness. Can't believe it.
Yeah. And how part of that did that get taken? Was that the result of an objection that
to 45%? Yeah. So, but the taxpayer had dug their own grave by the filing. And so even when I was talking to the auditor, and they said, well, we really can't do anything about it. Here's the returns. Here's what's been filed. And at the end of the day, the likelihood of them being successful in that, the estate just said, you know, just leave it. It is what it is. And that was it. But I was surprised to see, and this comes up in conversations with clients around, I want to claim my home office.
Yeah.
I want to claim 35% of my house. And it's like, not so fast. Right. So again, just the complexities.
That's a great claim story on just that precise situation with a doctor that had that has a business out of his home. Yeah. I'll share this one with you. It's kind of a neat little story. This one is one that was just settled. So let me walk you through this scenario. So they are a Alberta-based doctor operating a private practice from home. Mm. And the CRA decided to give him a call and ask him some more questions around floor plans, utility bills, and question their usage calculations. Mm. So this is a scenario where CPS get back involved and defend the position to the tune of 15 more hours handling the review and the fees, which reached just under $7,000. Mm. So the outcome there was, rather than pass that on to the client, because this doctor opted into the Audit Shield program, all of those fees were covered by Audit Shield. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's pretty common.
Yeah.
Would that have made a difference in your situation? Like if you had a budget of, what's the typical coverage for Audit Shield? $10,000 for?
Yeah. So it depends on the size of the business, but it can be from $10,000 up to $50,000.
So if you had that kind of a budget for that audit with that objection, does that make it, would that have made a difference to that case, you think?
Yeah. It's hard to know because I think there was, in this particular case, I think it would differ than most others where the family just wanted to put it behind them. They didn't want to keep, but you know, it was a lot of money and people walking away from $250,000. But they were uncertain in terms of what the next steps would be. It would just continue on. They just wanted to leave it and walk away. But I thought, wow, the precedent that sets. And you know, it just comes back to when people think, I can use any software preparation just to do my tax returns. Yeah, you can, and it will walk you through efficiently. But there's so many issues you're not even aware of.
And that all started with reporting this as rental income.
Yeah.
One of their returns.
Yeah. Being conscientious.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Like, I gave mom this amount of money for room and board. I better put it on. And they just did their own returns and it came back to haunt them.
I have a client. It's someone I assisted who noticed that they had missed their T1-135.
Okay. Yeah.
They missed, like 4 or 5 years ago, they'd missed 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they voluntarily filed it. It turns out they had previously made the same mistake and previously voluntarily disclosed it and got relief from the penalty. So like, you can get relief under the voluntary disclosure program for the same problem offense, twice.
Right.
Yeah. It could be a different problem.
Yeah.
But you only get one
kick at the can.
Kick at the can per kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so she got a $5,000 penalty.
Oh my goodness.
For like coming clean to say that, hey, 4 or 5 years ago, I missed this slip.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow. Eh.
And yeah, yeah, it's been strange.
That has a dampening effect on people wanting to come clean.
Yeah.
And did they go through voluntary disclosure for that?
They did. Yeah.
And they still got nailed with that.
They got nailed. The letter came back says
because they had already
we noticed that 10 years ago you missed this for a couple of years.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What are the legal rights for a taxpayer in a CRA audit?
Well, not a lot, actually, Jonathan.
Really?
Yeah, like this. It's well, the CRA has a lot of rights. They have the right to get information from you.
Yeah.
They don't actually, in my experience, they don't always use those rights as to the full extent that they could. Like they could actually compel you to come in, sit down, put on a tape recorder, and ask you questions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
As of 2022, they have that power.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen a ton of that at the small, medium business level.
How would you counsel somebody who's in that situation then?
Oh, I think if whatever your problem is big enough that the CRA wants to spend that money to talk to you, you should probably have a lawyer, number one.
Yeah,
to attend that interview. Because even though they can ask you a lot of questions, there's still limits to what they can ask. There's still an outer bound to what they can ask. And you probably want a lawyer there to make sure.
Yeah.
To prepare you to make sure your answers are clear because those answers will be important. But that, as I say, I don't see that scenario. In fact, I don't think I've seen that at all yet since 2022. I think that's reserved probably so far for very large organizations
or
taxpayers. Other than that, I think your main right is to challenge it later if it's wrong. That's where you have more power as a taxpayer, is it objections or possibly at the court.
In other words, using the objection or using the assessment to get CRA to show their hand.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you can respond to it.
Yeah. Your maximum leverage over the CRA is probably in the tax court, the final stage, right? Where.
Yeah. If you
want to get that far, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So people who get there tend to be ones with large amounts of money on the line that is worth taking.
What are some of the common mistakes you see taxpayers making in this process?
I have to mention, because it keeps coming up, the CRA reassesses you. Maybe there was an audit. Maybe it was a big audit. Maybe it was just a letter you didn't answer. And your accountant or your tax preparer files a T1 adjustment request instead of a notice of
objection. Yes, yes.
This happens a lot. There shouldn't be two different things. That's my idea at this point. It shouldn't be possible for you to log on to your account.
Yeah, and change. Make a change.
And do make a change or down below start a dispute. Because it causes confusion. There as a legal matter, those are two different things. Yeah. And if you miss that objection deadline.
Yeah.
It's a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So distinguish for us.
Yes.
What's the difference? Why is that important? A T1 adjustment versus a notice of objection.
So a T1 adjustment is asking the CRA, hey, I know I filed my return. I made this mistake. Please reassess me. And under the Income Tax Act and the GST Act is equivalent. They don't actually have to honor your request. They usually do. If you owe them money, they probably always do.
Yeah.
But they usually honor your request, at least if it's made within about 3 years. Some other considerations after that. But an objection is when the CRA issues you a notice of assessment. That's like a legal step that's been taken.
Yeah.
An objection says, I disagree with the amount of tax that you've assessed me. And the CRA has to answer that.
Yeah.
They have to answer that. And if it's a large amount of money, you want to keep fighting them, for example, go to tax court, you have to have done that step.
Right.
You have to have objected.
Right. And also the time limit issues arise with
that's
that, right?
That's
what activates that.
Exactly. So I've seen cases where, I have a case right now where the taxpayer's tax preparer filed T1 adjustment requests immediately upon receiving the notices of assessment. And never filed an objection. And the ultimate deadline to do something in terms of objection is a year and 90 days.
Yeah.
And you miss that deadline.
Yeah.
The tax court can't help you. The federal court probably can't help you. Like the court system can't help you.
Is there any remedy?
Well, that's what I'm looking at for that particular client. And I
stay tuned.
Stay tuned. I mean, whatever the remedies there are, they're very difficult, and they involve hiring a lawyer to think about them and try to figure them out, because they're slim relative to what the path that you should have followed, straight path, which it says at the bottom of the notice of assessment. If you disagree with this, within 90 days, please file a notice of objection.
Yeah. Is there ever a place for a T1 adjustment?
Well, if there wasn't, in your mind, if there wasn't a CRA reassessment to begin with, like let's say,
in a situation we filed a tax return, we missed something, and so we want to report.
That's what it's designed for. There hasn't been any CRA audit activity. You realize a mistake, either in your favor or CRA's favor, you want to correct it. That's where you use the adjustment.
Yeah,
but yeah, it really trips people up. Yeah. That distinction, both taxpayers, bookkeepers, accountants. Made that mistake.
Yeah. And the other area when you talk about when you realize a mistake's been made, and then thinking voluntary disclosure and filing voluntary disclosure too soon.
Right. Because the program requires it be 1 year past due.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And so then you filed it, they spit it out and they say, sorry, you applied too early. Is that the end of the case? I think it would be, because you've brought something to their attention and they can't address it because you've come to them too soon.
I think that's right. So let's say you're 9 months past whenever you should have told them about it.
Yeah.
And you tell them about it and now you owe 9 months interest. And it's a big number. It's a big number of interest. Yeah. And had you waited 4 more months, you would have qualified for the program and they might have given you a reduced interest rate over the year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I could see. Yeah. I think
that's the challenge.
Would be.
And I wonder if, I mean, is it the interest rate, like what discretion do they have in terms of waiving either penalties or interest through voluntary disclosure? You familiar with that?
I think it's set out in the policy.
Yeah.
I think the policy, I can't remember the exact amount for the reduction in interest. The policy, if you're part of the main program, the general program, as I recall, they will waive the discretionary penalty. So gross negligence, they won't charge you gross negligence,
right.
The 25 or 50% penalties.
Yeah.
And then on interest, I think it sets out a maximum up to 50%. Somewhere in that vicinity of the interest reduction that they'll set up.
Okay.
I think there's discretion on exactly how much that is. I don't know as a fact whether they consistently apply a certain number.
Hmm. It's an interesting area though.
It is.
All right. So let's talk about the role of Audit Shield.
Sure.
And what CPAs need to know about Audit Shield?
Well, where to start, really? Maybe it's best to start with misconceptions.
How many firms across the country? Is that something you...
Yeah, sure. I would say we're at about 600 CPA firms. Mm, and to be clear, we only work with CPA firms.
Okay.
Right? CPAs as an individual as well. And, you know, we cover the small firm, sole practitioner, all the way through to your, you know, multi-partner, multi-office firms, as well as your national networks like Baker Tilly's and so on.
Okay.
So it's about 600 firms, a couple of thousand CPAs that actively participate. I should say that we're partnered with, but you know, the real story is the quantity of business owners and taxpayers that opt into the program each year. There's tens of thousands of small business owners in particular that don't want to be levied with a surprise fee or bill, I should say, based on having to pay for those additional professional fees. So it's about putting that cap on the potential for additional fees when having to defend the position, your client's position with the CRA.
Common misconceptions.
Yeah, misconceptions. Well, it's in the name, right? Audit Shield.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody thinks, well, I guess they cover audits. I don't see a lot of audits.
Yeah.
And truth be told, we don't see a lot of audits when we look overall at the range of reviews, audits, investigations, inquiries that we cover. Audits is very few, but also the most complex. So misconception is that Audit Shield only covers audit, when in fact we cover everything from your T1 processing reviews all the way through to your audits and your GST, HST post and pre and post assessments, all of your corporate post assessing reviews, like your professional fees, vehicle expenses, to name a few, for non-business tax and all of that. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the most important things, just coming back to your conversation about some of the activity that you're seeing, routinely we'll work with CPAs that require the services, legal services, And we also cover legal services too, right? So probably one of my favorite stories, I'll read this to you. This is a quote that actually is all over LinkedIn right now. One of our original clients here, she's a CPA out in Victoria. She says, this is a direct quote. She says, after years and years of reviews, audits, appeals, we won over $200,000 saved in a GST interest and penalties. And her fees, as well as the lawyer that she worked with, was fully covered by Audit Shield. So she got to really be the hero in this story, yeah. Which is great.
Yeah, you know? You got the client out of the, out of a difficult situation.
Imagine that, though. It extended years, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a year and a half,
right? That's the problem. So,
Would you cover, like, let's say you need to translate some German will or something like that?
Yeah, it's okay.
You got to pay for a certified copy of the translation.
Yeah. Don't laugh. I've had that.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
In fact, I had that very thing last year, and the taxpayer translated it, but said to me, "Oh no, I've had it translated," and it was like, I took it to a German translator just to say, "What is this person saying here?" She says, "My name's on the tax return. I just want to know." Yeah. And so they came back and said, "Well, I think they use ChatGPT or something like that." And so I actually had it properly translated because I thought, you know what, I just need to make sure this is factually correct.
I had a sorry to take us off a tangent on this, but I had a meeting with a CRA auditor and a client who was English as a second language. And she asked him if he was using AI to translate her questions. Like it was a virtual meeting. So he was coming from his home to meet her. Wow. So he wasn't in that case, but I imagine they must be coming across taxpayers who are using
live translation
in their interviews, which is kind of an interesting situation. But
would that somehow alter what the person's responding? Like, why would she ask that question?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure why she asked that in that case, but I guess people are using it. People must be using AI to live action translation in their meetings with CRA.
And to answer your question, the short answer is yes. But it's as long as it follows the rule of thumb of what's covered, right? And so, how you know that your time is covered is that. Really the three rules of thumb, if you will, is that the CRA is calling, they're asking you a question about a filed return, and you have a compulsion to defend your client's position. So all of your time would be covered, including your legal fees. You need to bring in another CPA, maybe bookkeeping, and yes, translators. it's all about the nature of the inquiry.
How do you respond to practitioners who say my clients don't need Audit Shield? What's the
our data shows otherwise. I'll take you through a couple of scenarios just very quickly. Overall, across the country, what we're seeing is about a 1 in 4 take up. 25% of your clients, when made aware of the fact that you have Audit Shield, tend to want to opt in to the program. Yeah. And this is because, people don't want any surprise extra fees. Yeah. And also, what we're seeing is that more and more CPAs are making the point in their engagement letters that, if I have to defend your position, CRA is asking questions, that's incremental work. So if there's a dispute about that additional work, they can say, well, we've got Audit Shield, which effectively caps your fees. I mean, put it very, very simply, Audit Shield is a fee waiver service offering. So in the event of a review, audit, or investigation, all of your time in responding is covered, right? So it's just a peace of mind product primarily. Yeah. But coming back to that 25%, let's open that one up a bit. Maybe that's not that compelling, but Jonathan, you and I were having this conversation earlier. What about that other 75% that were also made aware of the fact that you have Audit Shield, but chose not to participate?
Yeah.
Right? Just think about the much
more.
I'm going
to get the bill from you for $600. And that's when I pull out and say, yeah, but I did tell you about this.
You got it. So we hear that side of it most frequently. I'll tell you this funny story from a couple weeks ago. I was running a claims presentation and doing an introduction on Audit Shield to a larger firm. And somehow we got into a conversation about the two guarantees in life, death and taxes. Partner mentioned to me, she says, Jason, there's actually three guarantees. I said, well, what's that? She says, the third guarantee in life, Jason, is that you can be guaranteed that any time during tax season, you will get a call from the CRA. That is to say, us as the CPAs will be hearing from the CRA. So that is true, I guess, from the standpoint of the increased level of activity that we're seeing as well.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So. I know I had a couple of calls on, I think it was April 29th or April 30th. And I said, seriously?
Yeah. That's not even funny.
Yeah. So Ben, somebody gets into a situation, when do they need to bring you in on a CRA audit?
I think it's probably driven by the amount at stake and the risk. So if you're getting looked at for, you claim $20,000 in charitable donations, that may not be worth your accountant's time, right, to help you dig up those receipts.
Yeah.
Or if your return is really well done and you're fairly confident and it's the question coming from CRA is straightforward, like the risk is, like the number might be high, but the risk is low, then maybe you need a lawyer.
Yeah.
I think it's when the numbers are high, the big amounts being asked about, or there's a concern about whether, you have some serious risk.
Yeah.
I think that's an assessment that I think the CPA could make, I think. Like, am I looking at a client that maybe has several areas that are risky in this return or past years or other corporations or what have you, that you want to talk to a lawyer.
So what's your typical file? Is there a typical file in your work or areas that you find yourself brought into that are more common than others or not?
I would say that we, with the exception of maybe the real estate issues that we talked about earlier, we come in more at objection and more at tax court stage.
Yeah, okay.
Because people often help them represent themselves or have accountants handle their first audit stages.
Yeah.
And it's when it's crystallized, when we know, okay, it's $500,000 on the line.
Yeah.
We think we have an argument. Yeah. We think the CRA got it wrong.
Yeah.
Can you help me?
Yeah. And that's where Audit Shield comes in a situation like that, with the legal fees I'm talking about, not just the tax or the interest, but the representation of the client.
Yeah. And so to be clear, it's all, to put it very simply, it's about time in responding, right? So whether it's your time, Jonathan, or Ben's time, based on having to respond to an inquiry on a review, yes, it would be covered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we see many situations where a CPA has decided to work with a legal team or a lawyer directly, and we cover that those fees as well.
Mm-hmm. And then beyond the notice of objection piece, what other options does a taxpayer have when they disagree with findings of CRA?
Well, they can go to tax court. That's the major option. And they don't actually have to wait for the objection to finish. Like,
And what's the wait time for?
The CRA publishes service standards for its answering objections.
Why are you laughing? Why is there a smile on your face?
Standards.
Well, I'm laughing because
SLAs.
I think they meet them in the order of 70 or 80%. The standard for a lot of them is a year. Like, I think a medium complexity objection, I think it's a year. Okay. A GST objection, I think it's also a year. The standard, and I think they meet that somewhere in the range of 70 to 80%.
Okay.
I'm laughing because you can skip that stage and go to tax court after 90 days.
Oh.
So whenever they wrote that in the Income Tax Act, it's probably in the 50s or something. Yeah. Like, there was an idea that like 90 days was too long to wait.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Imagine.
At least that's what I suspect, right?
Right.
So it's like, if the minister hasn't got back to you in 90 days, you don't have to wait for him anymore.
Yeah. Just go to court.
Go to court, yeah. Wow. So that's your major route. And I guess in a case where there's enough money on the line, and you're going to objections, there's a decision to make. Do I invest my effort at objections? Do I take that year?
Yeah.
It's probably cheaper in terms of fees. It's probably quite a bit cheaper.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's less effort.
And you might negotiate something.
Yeah. You may. Yeah. You might negotiate something.
Is that like?
You might also negotiate something in the court process.
Yeah. Okay.
The tax court process overwhelmingly results in settlements.
It does.
It's a small percentage that have a trial. Wow. The judge making a decision.
Wow.
Yeah. Typically.
That's really interesting. I haven't heard that.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Typically in my experience, you will spend about a year to 3 years, let's say, doing the first pretrial steps.
Mm.
You will finish the largest of those steps, which is what they call the examination for discovery, where they had a chance to bring you in on the record.
Everybody agrees on, like, yeah, on the facts. Yeah,
it's like the U.S. legal shows when they meet in the lawyer's office, right, and right, they have the video camera and
right.
So you get through that. Right. So they get to look at you in the whites of your eyes.
Right.
And that's you. The majority of cases that settle between that step and the trial, which is the next major step after that. Yeah, because they've looked at you. They've gotten your documents. This is the most attention that anybody in the government has ever paid to you.
Yeah.
In this situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a lawyer at the Department of Justice who has to either settle with you or stand up in the court in front of a judge and explain the CRA's position.
And what is it the CRA settles? Like in that negotiation, what gets settled? Does the taxpayer just cave and say, okay, I don't want to pay any more fees and just we'll pay the tax?
Or that's a great question. So you get situations where either side caves completely. The CRA caves completely or the taxpayer caves completely.
Wow.
Because the issue was an all or nothing issue, wow, right? Either it was a principal residence or it wasn't.
Right.
Those are the harder.
But those are not always, like in the scenario I talked about earlier.
That wasn't an all or nothing. That one you could have found a different percentage.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not an all or nothing. You're right. The all or nothings are harder to settle because you can't give, somebody's got to give everything up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Percentage are you getting from settles to trials, would you say? Is there a higher end on or higher number on the settling side?
Like the results you get? Like let's say you have a case you settled versus taking the trial.
Yeah.
Well, I think inherent, if you're selling the case, you're leaving something on the table, right? Like mm-hmm. you could have done better.
Mm-hmm.
You typically
that's the gamble.
Yeah, that's the choice you're making.
Yeah.
But when we look at the file at the beginning of the file, we see, what was assessed in your fact pattern, where it's a question of what proportion of the residence was a principal residence.
Yeah.
That's actually a very settleable issue because reasonable people can disagree about that.
Right.
It's a number.
Right.
Or let's say it's the valuation of a property that wasn't sold. It's
an
appraisal estimation. Very settleable issue.
Yeah.
If the audit was one where they denied, 100 different expenses with 100 different receipts, well, you could sit down with the Department of Justice lawyer and say, well, these ones are good.
Yeah.
and these ones we don't have receipts.
Yeah.
That's actually a lot of our job is being creative and figuring out ways that we can sell this to the Department of Justice and say, look, this is a good outcome, right? Like we recognize there's an issue. We're not going to get everything we want, but here's how we can avoid a trial.
And are they responsive to that?
In your experience? The fact that so many cases settle before trial shows that they are responsive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so. And Jason, you must see, you won't get involved in the legal side, but you see it from a claims standpoint. Is this a typical, the legal fees?
Well,
is that a typical?
Given that the CRA has become a lot more aggressive within the last year, and again, this is based on information shared with us from CPAs across Canada, where, what is it, gross negligence upfront to get your attention.
Yeah. Seems in many cases just a default, right?
Right.
That's their default position. Either because time's run out or something or other, just to keep the file open.
Yeah.
So at any point in time where there's the requirement for additional legal expertise or counsel, the CPA can feel very comfortable in bringing in somebody with that level of expertise, knowing that their time is covered through us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a big factor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big factor.
It's a big factor because in those situations, like where gross negligence is in play, that's probably a higher risk, higher number situation, right? And you may well be involved in a long objection or a tax court process.
Yeah.
And so the things that you're saying now to the CRA, like how you're answering questions and like those things will go into that record and they'll sit there.
They matter.
And they matter. Yeah. So if you say the reason I missed out on my tax return was because I was sick.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, you say the reason I missed it was because my accountant told me I didn't need to fill it out.
Yeah.
Both those things aren't true. So you better get your story straight.
Yeah.
And answer the questions correctly the first time.
That's true. So some key takeaways from today's discussion. Jason, what would you say?
Well, I would say that there is no question that when we compare the last 2 years versus the 2 years of COVID, when we were in lockdown, that the CRA has definitely come back with a vengeance. When we compare year over year, it continues to increase. There's no reprieve during tax season either, because we saw a 30% increase in terms of the notice of assessment letters that were submitted to us for claims. But
you know what I'm noticing on notices of assessment? They generate these express notices of assessment now.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah.
Kind of a confirmation more than it being a final notice of assessment. But there's a lot of confusion among taxpayers when they get a notice of assessment that says you owe $83,481.63. And they say, but I've already paid that. And there's a lag time between when they apply the payment to the account and they issue the notice of assessment. But then the verbiage in the description is you've got until May 28th to make this payment. And we've been, as practitioners, trying to educate clients, you've got to make, if that payment due date is April 30th, unless it falls on a weekend. And then they read this and the number of emails coming back saying,
I know.
You told me I had to pay this by April 30th. And they're saying, or the other side is, I've paid this. Why are they charging me $159.84? And the amount of time it takes just to respond to these and settle clients down, because clients automatically, I find, think that you've screwed up, right?
Yeah. And just to your point, it's your time, right?
Yeah.
And Audit Shield is a mechanism to churn your least recoverable time, the time that you tend to sometimes throw away.
Yeah.
Maybe you write it off. You don't even charge your whip. Yeah. Is a mechanism to make sure that
write down your order,
exactly
the time,
And so our suggestion is, from the moment that the CRA gives you a call or sends you an email, that's billable time that you should be able to recover. Yeah. And so it's important to use Audit Shield as a mechanism to turn your least recoverable time into your most recoverable time. Because the thing that I didn't tell you yet, Jonathan, is that we also become your most reliable debtor, because the moment you submit a claim to us, we generally pay it within 2 to 3 days.
Mm.
So we're very proud about that too. So anyway, CRA activity, from what we're able to see, continues, is on the rise. So
It's not going away.
No.
Not going away anytime soon. Well, Ben and Jason, I want to thank you both for spending some time to give us some war stories, some horror stories, and tell us what you're seeing, and educate us a little bit in terms of how to respond and the importance of knowing when to bring in legal representation when that's needed. So we've covered a lot today. Thank you both. And I hope you found today's session to be of help as you navigate practice and try to help clients as best as we can go through what can be a traumatic and stressful experience when CRA comes asking for information, or when you get that that CRA audit letter and the long list of documentation that they want. So hope you found today useful. If you have any further questions, how do people get in touch with Audit Shield?
Jason@accountancyinsurance.ca, or you can find us online very simply and submit a request for information.
Okay. And I know from experience, you actually answer the phone.
Yes.
Which is really unique.
Yes. It's very important. Yes.
It is. And Ben, how do people find you?
Well, you could Google Ben Grant Lawyer. You would find my firm's webpage and you could find my email and phone number. You can reach me. I will pick up the phone.
And we'll make sure it's on the screen as well. And you will answer the phone. That's great.
I will, yeah.
Okay, great. Good. All right. Well, thank you both. And thank you, everyone, for watching today. We hope you've enjoyed our session. Take care now.